Like Me show for today. I'm Phil Parr. You probably already knew that, though. And we're visiting with a lady from Fort Worth, Texas, named Liz Campbell. And Liz, you say it's quit raining up there, has it?
Yes, it has.
And you've had a little snow?
It's unusual for us, but we had about 3 inches of snow this morning. And it's starting to melt off, so I guess it was short-lived.
That's very unusual for any place in Texas to have snow.
Yes.
We just don't. I mean, Texas is just not known. We got a bunch of people on the list from Pennsylvania, and they have been just bombarded this winter with
I know.
All kinds of snow. But in Texas, it doesn't happen too often to us folks down here in Texas. Anyway, you have an unusual job, and we want to get into that in just a few minutes. But what is your level of vision?
I'm totally blind.
Totally blind. Have you always been totally blind?
Yes, I've been blind since birth.
You were born but totally blind?
Yes, I was born 3 months prematurely. I have ROP, and that, as probably most people know, means that I was given too much oxygen at birth.
Yeah, I hear a lot about that. I don't know much about it. I'd like to talk to someone about it. That I don't think that happens much anymore.
I don't believe it does, but at the time when I was born, which was in 1962, the doctors knew that too much pure oxygen would cause blindness, but they didn't. Obviously, they had to either do that or, you know, not allow me to live. So, of course, I'd rather be blind than, you know, not hear at all.
So the deal is, if you hadn't had the oxygen, you wouldn't have lived.
Correct.
Well, what a trade-off. I never had it explained quite that way to me. I've talked to several people who had that same problem. Anyway, so you were born blind, and you were born where? What part of the country?
In Fort Belvoir, Virginia. Outside of Washington, D.C.
Just south of Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Yeah, and your parents did what now?
At the time, my father was in law school, and my mother worked for one of the U.S. congressmen.
And here they had this blind child.
Correct.
And were you with your first child, or you have your brothers and sisters?
I'm the middle child.
Uh-huh. So Dad was in law school getting his degree, which we assume he went on and got.
Yes.
And along came Elizabeth, the middle child, totally blind. Now, well, obviously your parents talked to some people or visited with some people that knew something about blindness because they obviously let you grow up as a quote, normal, unquote, child.
I felt like I grew up in a pretty normal environment. I don't really recall ever being told too often, well, you shouldn't do that, or be careful with that, or you might get hurt, or, you know, things like that. I think my parents understood that one day I would be out on my own, and because of that, they really, when I was growing up, they really tried to treat me as any other child.
Yeah, because they wouldn't be there to protect you when you got out on your own, would you? You'd be dealing with the world just like anybody else does, sighted, blind, or otherwise. It's the same.
That's correct.
They don't change it for us, do they? All right. So, what sort of schooling did they send you to?
Well, for most of my schooling, I attended public schools. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. My parents originally are from Nebraska, so we grew up in Omaha. And I got my, I graduated from high school, from Westside High School. However, when I was little, there was only one resource teacher for, I would say, around 13 or 14 blind students,
mm-hmm.
and I was not getting enough Braille instruction. And so my parents decided to send me to the Nebraska School for the Blind, and I went there during my second and third grade years and then returned to public school in the fourth grade when I was proficient enough in Braille where I wasn't falling behind my classmates.
So the reason for sending you to the Nebraska School for the Blind was so that you could improve your Braille technique.
Yeah.
You could learn to do Braille a little better.
That's correct. Because when I was finishing up my first grade year and starting my second grade year, my parents said that I was falling behind my sighted classmates in subjects, you know, like reading and learning how to write sentences and things like that, and I needed to be on an equal footing with them, and so that's why I was transferred to the Nebraska School for the Blind.
So when Dad got a law degree, you all moved back to Nebraska.
Yes,
yeah,
and that was, I think, when I was about 2 years old, so I don't really remember that.
It's mighty cold in Nebraska compared to compared to Fort Worth, Texas.
But you don't think about that when you're growing up there. It's kind of like, take it as a matter of course.
When you're a kid, nothing bothers you. You know, you're little. And so they sent you to Nebraska School for the Blind, and did you find that? Of course, you met some other blind children there. Which was good. You met some that handled it well and some that didn't, I suppose, just like the rest of us, right?
Yes, I don't. I mean, being so young, I didn't really think of people either handling blindness or not. We just, you know, I just made friends at the school. And so I didn't really think in terms of.
I guess people, that's true.
You know, handling it or not handling it. I honestly was rather taken aback by the strictness of the school because when I was at home, I mean, my parents, you know, didn't let us go do whatever we wanted, but we didn't have such rigid rules where you had to get up at 6, you had to get up when the bell rang at 6:30 and be at breakfast by 7 and your classes by 8, and then you had a certain amount for time, playtime and homework, and it just regimented, and I really was not used to that sort of environment.
And it was completely different when you were at home, when your brothers and sisters and parents had ice cream, you got some too. And up there, that didn't happen. You were just one of a herd, and so you had to go to bed at a certain time and get up at a certain. I guess, you know, that's the only way they could do it. But it sure does seem like you're blind and being punished for it, doesn't it? It's just.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand what you said.
I say it's almost like you're blind and you're being punished because you're blind.
Well, I don't really think it was punishment because you're being blind. I think it was just it was a difference in environments. You know, from my home environment to being in, you know, a totally different setting at 6 and 7 years old, you know?
Yeah, and that can be traumatic for a young blind child. But anyway, you did a couple of years at Nebraska, and then they brought you home to public school again.
Yes.
Which you were very happy about, I suppose.
Oh, yes. I missed my friends that I had made, you know, before leaving for the School for the Blind. I also missed my friends I met at the School for the Blind, so
yeah.
it wasn't just a totally easy transition to go back to public school.
Yeah.
Because
are there any folks that you kept up with from the School for the Blind or not? I guess
no, I think that we've all kind of moved to different parts of the country and all that, so I really don't keep up with anyone from the school.
So you graduated, or you went all through, after this is starting in the fourth grade, you went through junior high and high school in a normal public school.
Yes.
Now, what sort of things did you participate in school? Band or drama or, I guess, journalism?
Well, actually, no, I didn't participate in journalism at all. I really didn't think about journalism until I was in college. And even then, it wasn't until I was a sophomore. I really enjoyed languages and different cultures, and still do. And at the time when I was in high school, especially, I was in the Spanish club and also the German club and National Honor Society. And I also was really involved with there was a group that welcomed the new students to Westside High School, and I was involved with that. And I was also involved with the choir. So I was in a number of activities. I will say, And I think this is true of a lot of blind children from my generation, that even though we were in public school, you know, we were being mainstreamed.
Yeah.
We were not really encouraged to be involved in any kind of athletics, you know, whether it be, I mean,
yeah,
swimming or, I don't know, not basketball, but I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that we weren't really encouraged to really get involved in a lot of PE type activities, and I think that's changing now for blind children.
We'd hope so, wouldn't we?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that was probably the main difference. I took mobility when my classmates were. I mean, I took some PE, but I often used that particular class time to do mobility and other blindness skills.
Now, they didn't discourage it; they just didn't encourage it. Am
Correct.
I right?
Correct.
Whereas now they, because I thought maybe they thought you would get hurt, or they didn't. Of course, they didn't know a lot about you, about blind. A lot of them didn't. Whereas at a blind school, they'd know, you know, a lot about blind people. But at public school, they wouldn't know. There would only be a few people there who would really know what blind people could do, and so I can see how they would not encourage it. They might be afraid you'd fall off those monkey bars and hurt your little blind self, right?
Well, I played a lot on the playground, you know, on that kind of equipment, on the monkey bars and on the slides and things
yeah.
like that. I just remember that. Whereas my sisters, you know, were on the swim team and things like that, I had a different path, you know.
I talked to a kid in California the other day that they he actually forced them to let him march in high school band.
Oh yeah, in fact, I know a young man who now lives in Louisiana, but he was living in Austin a couple of years ago, and he loves band. I mean, he plays the trumpet and does very good. I mean, I think that's excellent that blind kids are having those kinds of examples.
Yeah, they kind of guided this kid. The boys on each side would kind of guide him with their elbow. In other words, if the guy on the right kind of bumped into you with his elbow, that meant move right. And
uh-huh.
so he marched with the band. He told this great story about the horses in front of the band. He had marched around a big pile of horse dung in the middle of the road. And he didn't know what it was because he was beating on his little drum there. And nobody could tell him. It's kind of fun. So they did let him do that. But they not discouraged you, but they didn't encourage you in athletics. But everything else, and you did all this without no computer because there weren't any then, were there?
That's correct.
So you're a proficient Braille user.
Oh, yes.
You're a Braille user. Everybody is but me. I'm the only one in the world that doesn't use much Braille. And I'll tell you what, let's take a little short break, and then we'll move you on to college and talk about your college experience, where you went to college. And we're visiting with Liz Campbell. We'll be back in just a minute with more of our Blind Like Me show.
Never meet again on the bumpy road to love. Though I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you hold your knife.
Facts about blind folk. Information you probably never need. Titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Mark Christie.
Born in 1953 and raised in Grinnell, Iowa, Peggy Pender attended regular schools until the middle of the ninth grade, when her eye condition declined into total blindness. Her father cried for the first and only time in her life, at least as far as she knows. Pender then spent what she characterizes as 2.5 unhappy years at the Iowa School for the Blind. Academically, she learned nothing that she had not already been taught in public school. The students were discouraged from learning to use the white cane and were never allowed off campus unless they were accompanied by a sighted person. But most soul-destroying of all, the students were discouraged from aspiring to success or from setting themselves challenging goals. Pender resisted the stifling atmosphere and drew down upon herself the wrath of the school administration, which refused to permit her to complete high school there, forcing her to go back to public school. Pender went on to Iowa's Cornell College, where she achieved an excellent academic record and edited the Cornelian, the school newspaper, and then completed law school at Yale University, receiving her J.D. degree in 1979. Pender enrolled in the Orientation and Adjustment Center, where she mastered the skills of blindness and explored for the first time the healthy and positive philosophy of blindness that had subsequently directed her life. After graduation from law school, she passed the Iowa bar in January of 1980. She eventually was hired as assistant county attorney for Woodbury County in Sioux City, Iowa, where she prosecuted defendants on behalf of the people. In 1986, she completed the campaign for the Iowa State Senate on the Republican ticket. She won the primary and campaigned hard in a district containing about 60,000 residents, distinct minorities of whom are Republican. Like many candidates, Pender was not elected on her first bid for public office, but she made a very strong showing and is often asked when she will run again. For the past several years, Pender, a 1976 winner herself, has chaired the Scholarship Committee of the National Federation of the Blind. Every year, approximately 25 scholarships, ranging in value from $1,800 to $10,000, are presented to the best blind college students in the nation. On the Blind Side, I'm Mark Christie.
On the Blind Side, celebrating the contribution of blind people to societal evolution.
Speaking with Liz Campbell today. She lives in, resides in Fort Worth, Texas, and we have her through high school, went to a couple of years of the Nebraska School for the Blind. I don't think we've had anybody from Nebraska School for the Blind, and did most of her schooling in a public school, what we call a public school, or a normal normal educational channels. Graduated high school. How'd you do in high school? Pretty good?
I did pretty well. I did well enough to make it onto the into the National Honor Society. I think I graduated with probably a 3.7 or a 3.8 GPA from high school.
The National Honor Society.
Yes.
Doing it all in Braille. See that?
Correct.
Well, of course, some books you couldn't get in Braille. They read to you, I suppose, right?
Or on at that time, I started using books from Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic.
Yeah, they finally got that up and running, right?
Uh-huh.
Let me see where. And so you graduated high school in the Honor Society, and you decided you were going to go to college. Did you know at that point in time what your life's work or life's career might be?
Well, I was really wanting to pursue a degree in Spanish and social work.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that staying in Nebraska would not really benefit me for my Spanish skills, and so I had applied to Baylor University in Waco, Texas, because they have a very good language program.
Uh-huh.
And I was accepted and went down to Baylor in the fall of 1980, which, as a lot of people who have been in Texas for a while know, that was the hottest summer in Texas. And I thought, why am I here?
You weren't used to that 110.
No.
And so that took you aback. As cold as it was in Nebraska, we have equally... I mean, it's nothing for it to be 110 degrees when you get off work in the afternoon. We think in Texas, we think nothing. Now that's a normal day for us, you know. And so, but you were used to that. But they accepted you at Baylor University.
Yes.
And so your parents were still in Nebraska.
Correct.
So you flew to Dallas, and how'd you get to? Could you fly into Waco?
At that time, yes, you could. My mother came down with me, and we actually stayed with a friend of ours who lived not too far from Waco, and and then we drove to Waco.
Yeah.
And she helped me get settled in the dorm.
And you did the dorm the first year, right?
Yes, I lived in the dorm for 3 years, and then I moved off campus with a friend of mine my senior year.
Okay, so you pursued a degree. Of course, the first year you were just taking kind of the basics that you take in college, but you had intended to do what? What would you do with a degree like that? Go overseas and work? Or?
And with Spanish and social work?
Yeah.
Well, I thought, you know, at the time, and it's still the case now, there's so many people coming up from Mexico.
Yeah.
And other countries. And I thought that, you know, perhaps there would be some career for me in that area since I really enjoyed the languages.
As a bilingual social worker, there would be. You know, they say in by the year, I think by the year 2020, there's going to be more people of Spanish descent in Texas than there are not. Had you read? Did you know that?
Yes, I had heard that. Uh-huh.
That just blows me away. I guess I better learn Spanish. You already know it, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Oh, I bet you do. And so what? You went through college. You took some basics and started taking advanced Spanish. And something changed your mind in college. Tell us about that.
Well, I took a beginning journalism class, and it was taught by a professor who had worked for many years with the Associated Press, and he had covered a lot of the early space flights. He also covered the Kennedy and Johnson administrations and spent time in Vietnam. And and I thought, you know, these are all fascinating events. And he spent a lot of the class time recounting his experiences as a reporter. And I thought, that really sounds quite interesting. And I had always scored very high on the interest tests in areas such as, you know, communication and things like that. And I just never really, you know, looked at that, at, you know, interviewing or writing or reporting as career options. Not that I didn't think because I was blind I couldn't do it, but I just never had thought about it.
Yeah.
And then I just thought, I don't know if I really want to go into social work. I mean, there is a tremendous amount of bureaucracy and paperwork involved with a lot of the jobs in social work. And
oh, yeah.
With journalism, you have a lot of freedom to you know, go out and find your own stories and talk to people. And I thought, you know, that really sounds appealing to me.
But you realize that you may not ever have any experiences that parallel this professor, because he had been... he had done, obviously, a lot of things that most journalists don't get to do.
Well, that's true. But it gave me a lot of food for thought in terms of thinking, well, you know, I've always enjoyed history. I'd always enjoyed listening to the news growing up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But never really thinking of that as a career possibility for myself. And... so I decided that I would like to pursue a double major in Spanish and journalism.
So you became a bilingual journalist.
Yes.
Now, which one was your major?
I had two majors.
Two majors?
Yes.
And you did this in 4 years?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty amazing in and of itself. Did you meet any other blind folks at Baylor?
I was the only blind student at Baylor at the time when I was going there. Now, when I graduated, there was another gentleman who also was blind who came to Baylor. Now, I'm not sure if he ever finished, but he came and at least started his college career at Baylor.
See, that's people that don't live in Texas don't know about. Baylor's a big deal. Baylor's a big university. I mean, it's... I have no idea what the student enrollment is, but I would guess thousands, wouldn't you think? 5,000?
I think it's maybe somewhere around 15,000. I'm not sure if that's exactly accurate, but I think it's over 10,000 students.
And it's a Baptist, quote-unquote, university run by the Southern Baptist Convention, I suppose.
Yes.
And that to be the only blind, that's amazing that you're were the only blind person there. You'd think there'd be several. Who knows why, but anyway, your college experience was good, obviously. You, of course, a lot of those books you could get from RFB&D, I suppose?
Yes, I got books from RFB&D. What I did, I contacted my professors before the classes and asked them to tell me which books they were going to be using. Now, some didn't know until the last minute, but I tried to get them to give me the information as early as possible so
sure.
I could find out if they were available through RFB&D. And if not, I hired readers to assist me with the books that were not available through RFB&D.
Yeah, which is the old way that everybody used to do it. Get to either if you couldn't get the books in Braille, you'd have to find a reader. Well, it sounds like you did fine in college Did you? I guess they don't. Do they have fraternities and sororities at Baylor?
Yes, And I was a member of the Delta Gamma fraternity, which it's technically a—I mean, it's for women, but they call it a fraternity. But and its philanthropy is aid to the blind. And so I asked if, you know, this sounds kind of self-serving, but I was asked if I could just be the chapter project because I needed to have readers.
Well, sure, why not?
And so all of my friends, you know, really liked the idea because it helped them out and helped me out too.
So you became sort of their this fraternity's project.
Yes.
And you know, there are blind people who would worry about that, about taking. I take all the help I can get. Anybody wants to help me, I don't spurn any help. You know.
Well, I think as much as possible, we should do things independently and
sure.
on our own. At the same time, I was taking a lot of upper-level Spanish classes and journalism classes where the books were not available.
Yeah, where there wasn't any books.
And I really had to rely on the readers for those subjects.
Well, sure, and why not? And this fraternity's there just so happened their mission was helping the blind.
Yes.
And so they ask you to, and well, that's amazing. And so that you had a lot of girls in the fraternity that came and read to you, and you obviously made some friends, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Made some good friends with those girls. And so college was a good thing for you. You did it in 4 years. You got a degree in journalism and a degree in Spanish also. So here you were, 22, 23 years old. What do you do now? What do we do? We're out of college. And what the heck? What do we do now?
At that time, I honestly was considering going to graduate school and getting a master's degree in some aspect of Latin American studies.
Uh huh.
And then I just thought, well, that may not be the best idea because I really did not have much work experience, and I thought I needed to start gaining some work experience. So I started applying for jobs at various newspapers, and
did you, when you applied, did you let them know that you had a vision problem?
Oh yes.
Yeah. What did you get? Some interviews? Did some people call you? And
I got interviews at several newspapers. I got an interview at the San Angelo newspaper, and I. And at that time, they were having a hiring freeze. They were interested in hiring me, but they had a freeze.
Well, thank heavens you didn't get that job. I've been to San Angelo. You don't want to live there.
I've been there, and it's interesting. It's not that bad of a place. I mean, you have to start somewhere, you know?
Well, the problem is, I guess San Angelo is a big enough town that they have all the good restaurants and all the good everything now. But at the time I was out there, which was 10 or 12 years ago, you know, there wasn't a Walmart, and there wasn't a this, there wasn't a that. I'm sure by now there is, so it might not be a bad place to live, but it's sure a long way from everywhere, you know?
Right, yeah. It's definitely out there in West Texas.
So you went out there and interviewed, went to San Angelo and interviewed?
Yeah, I took the Greyhound bus out there.
Did you now?
Uh-huh.
That's an interesting thing in and of itself, taking busing. I'm busting a long time. They may be wonderful things, but I sure did hate them when I had to do them. Anyway, so you went out there and talked to this guy, and it was a hiring freeze, so they didn't hire you.
Correct.
Came back to where you were living in Waco at this time, or what?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I was about ready to graduate, and I thought, oh, you know, I need to find something. And so then I talked to my journalism professor, the one who, he was my advisor, he was the one who had worked at all these very interesting jobs as a reporter, and then he said, well, you know, I happen to know some people at the Star-Telegram in Fort Worth, and I said, I had several friends who applied to that newspaper but did not get hired at the paper, and he said, well, we're not talking about your friends, we're talking about you, and let me make some phone calls and see what I can do. And it just so happened that at the time, which was in 1984, the newspaper had a program to encourage people with disabilities and minorities to work in the newsroom.
And so now they were confronted with actually hiring one in their own newsroom, weren't they?
Yes.
Good. Good for you. So you went there, and they hired you.
Well, yes, they did. Now, not initially. I started out as an intern for a couple of months and see how I would do. Because, and I agree to that because I'd never worked at a paper. I didn't really know what to expect, and I didn't really know what to expect from me.
You'd never been... Had you ever been inside a newspaper office in your life? Did you know
anything?
Well,
I had been, of course, at our college newspaper.
Yeah.
And I went to the Omaha paper a couple of times over the summers to see people I knew there.
Yeah, so you wrote for the college newspaper?
Yes. Oh, yeah, you have to. That's part of the journalism degree. You have to write.
That's part of the journalism
school.
Yeah. Now, how would you do that? You did that type that?
I typed it. I typed my stories on an electric typewriter.
Yeah.
And I had my notes. I took my notes in Braille.
And typed the story on an electric typewriter. No strikeovers.
Yes.
Boy, you had to be perfect.
Well, as perfect as you can be.
Yeah, if you messed up, well, you know, what do? Start over. It's about all you can do. Anyway, so you're a great course. Would they, my buzzword today is site-dependent. It's what I call sighted people. Anyway, if a site-dependent person had applied at the paper, would they have, they would have had an internship too, wouldn't they?
Most people, when they start out at newspapers, are encouraged to have internships in college, which I did not have.
Yeah.
So most people who are hired are given, you know, a certain number of months of probationary period, just like any job
sure.
that you're hired onto.
Yeah. Now, what was your method of mobility when you went to...
Using the cane.
You were using your cane.
Uh-huh.
So did you, the first morning that you went to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram building, had you ever been there before?
Well, I had been there for my initial visit and interview, but I'd been there just once.
So I'm trying
to remember, I think maybe my editor at the time met me in the lobby and showed me where my desk would be, and... I think that we spent some time walking around the newsroom so I'd get a feel for it and learning, you know, how to find the cafeteria and things like that. And
now, you did that on your first day or before your first day?
I believe I did it on my first day.
Yeah. Because I know I've worked at several radio stations, and always before my first day at the radio station, I would go there a couple nights before, unbeknownst to the management, and learn... At least the physical layout of the building, so I wouldn't look quite so stupid, you know, bumping, falling over trash cans.
Well, in my situation, I went for an interview on a Friday and went back to Waco and got my things together and moved into an apartment in Fort Worth.
Over the weekend?
Yeah, and started on a Monday.
So you had an interview on Friday, and they hired you, and they said, be here Monday.
Yes.
Well, good, because that's what they would have done to a sighted kid, isn't it?
Correct.
So you had to make arrangements to find an apartment. Did Mom come down then?
No. One of my friends from Waco helped me, and at that time the newspaper did have some apartments available for interns, and so
yeah.
I didn't have to hunt for an apartment.
Okay.
At first, which was good. But the apartment also was not near any public transportation, so I had to rely on someone from the paper who lived in that general area to come and pick me up and take me home.
And you, luckily enough, you found someone at the paper who was willing to do that.
Yes, for
that
a short time. And then when I was hired, then I asked other blind people I met in Fort Worth where the best places, to live, would be for blind people.
Yeah, to access public transportation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have handy rides at that time, I guess, did they?
I believe that they did, but as much as possible, I really prefer to use public transportation.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have you at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Have you done your internship? And by the way, she's still there. And this was... You've been there 20 years now, almost 20 years now, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Let's take another little short break and come back, and we want to talk about how you do your job and what they expect of you and maybe some of the bumps you've had along the 20 years that you've worked there. Back in with more of our Blind Like Me show in just a minute.
Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's Blind Sight, here's Don Shaw.
Hi there. You know, if you end up having to go to that doctor and you get your prescription, you get it filled, bring it home, and you get to thinking, I wonder what the side effects of this might be, or really what does it do, and exactly how is this going to work. Or you have any medical questions that you really want to learn the answers to, go to Dr. Koop, that's www.drkoop.com. It's a really great medical site to go to. They have a medical encyclopedia that you can go through and look up medical conditions that you may or may not want to know about, depending on what your situation may be. And all kind of topics are being discussed every week up there. It's a great resource, a great wealth of medical information, in fact. And for a screen reader friendliness rating, I'd have to give it a 5, maybe pushing a 6. The thing is about this site is there's just an unreal amount of information and links to go through. But if you can navigate through it, it's well worth your time. Go and take a look. I'm Don Shaw. Until next time, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight.
We're visiting today with Liz Campbell on Blind Like Me, and she is an employee of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, a reporter at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. She's gone through, went to Baylor University, went to public school, a couple of years at Nebraska School for the Blind, and landed in 1984 at her first job in a moderately big city newspaper. And it is, isn't it? This is a whole lot bigger deal than the San Angelo Star Times or whatever it is.
Oh yes. It's a much larger newspaper. You know, Fort Worth itself has around 500,000 people, so our daily circulation is about 200,000, and on Sundays it goes up to about 300,000, if not more. So, we circulate pretty widely.
Well, yeah, it's a big newspaper in Texas.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
right.
one of the Texas big newspapers. Let me ask you this: does Molly Ivins work at that newspaper?
She used to. She's now syndicated through another news organization, but she used to work with us.
If I wasn't married, I would marry her. I love her. She's a wonderful, satirical writer. Of course, she's liberal, and so am I. But she's very. She puts things in such a wonderful slant on things. I read her every Luann reads her to me every Sunday. Anyway, you're at the Fort Worth Star Telegram. You did your first your internship 2 months, and during that 2 months, if you hadn't been satisfactory, they could have said we can't use you, and you would have had no redress or anything because you were just an intern.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so what did you do on the first few days? What did they start you doing?
Well, I started out on our state news desk taking obituaries and doing weather stories over the phone. And
in other words, your funeral home would call you.
Yes.
Give you the obituary.
Yes.
You would listen, hold the phone with your shoulder, and you're writing in Braille with your hands.
Yes.
And so you would take the obituary from the funeral home, write it in Braille, and then type it.
Well, actually, I didn't really type it. I had to use the computer, but I didn't have any adaptive equipment at the time, so I had to rely on the fact that the computer was going to be set up for me to work on it, and yep. I had to really literally type without knowing for sure that I was typing the right stuff into the computer, because when I got to the paper, the very first thing they told me was that, well, Liz, we don't use typewriters here. It's all done via computer. And I had heard in college that newspapers were gravitating in that direction toward computers, but I thought, oh, I don't have to worry about that right away. But I had to learn about computers from the get-go. And I remember calling my counselor at the Nebraska services for the blind and saying, oh, they want me to use computers. Now what do I do? And he said, don't worry about it. We'll help you. We have a technology specialist, and we will help you get set up with the necessary equipment.
You called your commissioner in Nebraska?
Yes.
Because you had not been transferred to Texas. And this was 1984, and at that time they had some sort of a speech engine that kind of worked, or what?
Oh, yeah. They had they had two pieces of equipment I started out using. One of them was a VersaBraille, and that was a device where the Braille information was stored on cassette tapes and later on floppy disks.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that for a lot of my note-taking, and to me it was just great because I didn't have to use a bunch of paper.
Yeah.
And then I used an Apple computer because that had, you know, pretty good speech. So, and I transmitted my stuff to the paper via modem.
So they, someone from here, a technology specialist, came and set it up where you could use this computer, and then of course you couldn't hook into their network, so you fed it to the paper with a modem.
Yes.
On the just like you'd get on the internet.
Yes.
Very good. Very good. So then you knew the computer, but then you were able to tell if you were actually typing in the computer.
Oh, correct. Mm-hmm.
So these people would call on the phone, and you would take the obituaries, and you said weather stories. Now, they would call the weather, back then they called it the Weather Bureau, didn't they?
Well, at that time, we had to call different counties to find out if we heard about storms, you know, like if they got rain, you know, things like that, and was there anything really, you know, momentous for their needs, you know, accidents or anything like that, or so. And then I got.
Well, but those were both jobs somebody had to do,
right?
And the day before you came there, somebody else was doing those jobs because they've got to have obituaries and they've got to have weather. So they might have started a normally sighted kid out doing the same
thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, well, and then I moved into. They had an opening for someone to cover religion. And so I learned quite a bit about, at the time, you know, the plight of Central American refugees coming to Texas. And also I got a chance to learn about the problem of homelessness because at that time churches were starting to get more involved with helping the homeless. So in a way I got to... not do social work, but I got to certainly do a lot of stories that I hoped would maybe increase people's awareness of the fact that, you know, things are not perfect out there.
No, it isn't perfect. So, but you actually, at this point in time, you got to write some stories.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas you had not gotten to do that before. You actually got to begin to hone a writing skill. And you would, how would you get, as a religious... reporter, religious journalist for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. It's Monday morning. Where do you get a story? You can't just call the First Methodist Church and say, "Hey, you got anything?"
At first I got a lot of assignments from my editors, but then gradually, as you begin to develop sources, they'll call you and say, "Oh, we have thus and so going on," or you know, a church might call and say. Well, we have this program to teach Central American refugees English, you know, things like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but did they have a write-up in the paper of revivals that are going on or things that are going, activities like that that are going on? They don't do that in the newspaper, do they?
Well, they had a calendar of events.
Okay.
That I didn't put that together. I did more of the stories.
You did actual stories?
Yes.
And once people learned that this is what you did, if they were doing something unusual at a church, they would call you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so you began to develop some sources, and you actually got to do some writing. Was that your assignment?
I covered religion, and there was another gentleman covering religion also, and I covered that for about, like, 3 years. And then I thought, I want to do something different, and so I talked to the my editors of the paper, and then I moved to the features section, you know, the human interest stories where you get to do... I wrote a lot of different types of stories about, you know, traveling around Texas, you know, where to take day trips. That was a lot of fun to do that. And also, you know, some human interest stories. and I also wrote some about Latin music. I got to use my Spanish background and do stuff on the Latin music. And I also got to use my Spanish a fair amount for the religion coverage, too, because, I got to do all the stories about the Salvadorans and Nicaraguans and so forth who came up here.
Yeah, that would have been all about that time, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so you did get to use that Spanish. And you say feature stories like traveling around Texas. Did you do some traveling or did you
Oh,
just,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
I had drivers who went with me.
But now, you did not try to, this was not done from a blind person's perspective. This is mainstream media. You were not the blind journalist for the Fort Worth Star-Tribune. This was for everybody to read, right?
Uh-huh.
And so you would do some traveling and go places and talk to the people there and maybe take some Braille notes while you were there.
Oh, yeah.
And then come back and write up just like any other travel journalist would do.
Right.
Well, very good. I mean, that just sounds like a really neat, there's some teenage and college folks going out there going, I want to do that. You know there are blind kids that are, that would like to do that and maybe think it's, well, like when I got into radio, I thought, well, this is impossible, but it wasn't. It wasn't impossible. I could do it, but I didn't know I could do it until I was actually doing it, and the same thing applies here. Because surely there are other blind journalists.
There are a few. There aren't too many.
I wouldn't think so.
And I hope to see that change. But anyhow, after I worked in features for about 4 years, then I have spent about the past 10 years in what we call the metro, or the main newsroom of the paper. And to me, that's the most interesting. That is the hub of where everything goes on. That's where you get your police stories and your court reporting and just all kinds of different stories that happen.
And much of this, even by your peers, is done by phone.
Oh, yes.
So you have the same advantage they do because you're you can use a telephone as good as anybody. That being blind has nothing to do with that. And so that's how you get most of the stories that you do.
Well, yes, but I really prefer to get out of the office as much as I can, too. Right now I'm covering the Johnson County area, which is a really rapidly growing area south of Fort Worth. It includes cities of Cleburne and Burleson, and it's growing tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're starting to cover that area more closely, so I'm doing stories primarily about the communities in Johnson County.
That are going to be swallowed up by the big city?
Well, yes. We hope not totally, but they're seeing all kinds of growth. They're getting Home Depot and Walmart and Target and all kinds of things.
Yeah, so they're becoming what we call bedroom communities, or people sleep there and then work in Fort Worth, maybe.
Right.
A lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to these counties and just tell us what you did this week. Just give us the last couple of weeks. What have you done?
Well, I spent time this week in the city of Joshua, which is not that far from Fort Worth. I had to go to a council meeting down there, so I did that.
How'd you get there? Someone drove you?
I have several drivers who I work with.
Okay.
And I did that, and then I had to go to Cleburne, which is the county seat. I went there a couple of times to do different stories. And, so you've got to do some advanced planning that maybe your sighted colleagues, don't necessarily have to do.
Yeah.
Because as much as possible, you need to be able to get out of the office and there's no public transportation to those cities, and so I need to come up with ways to get there.
Yeah, with the driver that will drive. And so you have several people that you can depend on that drive for you.
Yes.
And so you went to their city council meeting, how do you take notes now?
Oh, I definitely still use Braille. I use my Braille light.
You still, you have a Braille light, so you sat there with that in your lap and took your notes.
Oh, yeah.
And came back and wrote up a story.
Actually, I didn't have to do it from this meeting, but But sometimes you go to meetings and get ideas for future stories.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, on many occasions I have come back and written stories and just read, just like anyone else would, read your notes from the Braille light, and then just, now I'm totally connected to the network and everything, so I can, you know.
Oh, well, sure.
Like
you can zap
else.
It to the editor in a heartbeat, just like everybody
uh-huh.
else can. Yeah, because you're up in, computers just did so much for us, you know.
Oh, it's tremendous.
I don't see how we operated without. How were us poor blind people stumbling along before we got computers? Anyway, but there really wasn't interest, anything you didn't feel was interesting enough in this city council meeting to actually do a story on, right?
Well, it wasn't a matter of that. It was just that, I mean, there were some ideas for some future stories, but there wasn't anything immediately that had to be done for the next day.
Uh-huh. So, and you did that this week. Oh, my alarm's going off. Hang on just a second. Let me stop that. Okay, I was supposed to make a tape at 5. I can make it tomorrow at noon, though. I was going to go tape Prairie Home Companion. You ever listen to that little show on public radio?
Yes.
I try to tape it every week. It's a pretty blind-friendly show since it's radio. There's no character actors to watch.
Right.
Anyway, so that's one of the things you did this week. But other than that, you were in the office calling, talking to... of course, I guess you get assignments, like you said, from the editor.
Sometimes we get assignments, but primarily they really expect us to... I mean, I'd say I do about like 95% of my work without getting assignments.
The stories that you come up with on your own or someone...
yes, or from getting phone calls from people, you know, getting emails, that sort of thing, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you write the story, send it to the editor, and he or she put it where they decide to put it in the paper, right?
Correct.
Is the Fort Worth Star-Telegram on this? I know you're familiar with this big NFB thing that they have where we can read 50 or 60.
Yes, uh-huh. NFB Newsline Texas. In fact, I'm one of the coordinators for that.
You were one of the coordinators for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so you, Fort Worth Star-Telegram is there.
Yes, as
okay.
are all of the other papers owned by the Knight Ridder Corporation.
And that's who owns the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Yes, mm-hmm.
I've never gone and read it. I don't know if it's even in my favorites. But I will, and I'd love to read something you've written. We are getting kind of close to the end here, but you mainly use your Braille note and the computer. And, of
yes.
course, with the Braille note, you can transfer things from the computer to the Braille note or vice versa, can't you?
So yes, I can. I tend to use the Braille light, though, as a standalone note taker when I'm away from the office. And... when I'm in the office, I have a Braille display attached to my computer, and I also have JAWS, and I have the K1000 program for scanning.
Uh-huh. So anything you want to read, you just scan it in and read it. But your notes when you get, just one quick thing, your notes when you get back to the office, are you looking at them with your hands and then typing, or do you send them to the computer and make a text file out of them?
I primarily just read from the Braille light and then just, type. I try to mark the important things in my notes so that I can just find things pretty quickly and go a little bit faster with my stories.
Well, I don't know how many blind journalists there are, but certainly in 1984, you were pretty much breaking new ground. At least for these folks at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram who have got to, one of them has got to gone, well, geez, I don't know about this. People haven't been around blind people, don't know what we can do, so they're...
I think that there, was some reluctance to...
You know there was.
...hire me, but I think that by this time the paper realizes that I'm doing a good job and I'm capable of doing the work just like anybody else.
Well, you've been there 20 years. I guess they'll put you on regular pretty soon, Leah. Don't you figure
right.
they will? Listen, do you have an email address you'd mind giving that if anyone was interested in what you do and was an aspiring someone who wanted to be a journalist?
Certainly. They can contact me at Liz, L-I-Z, at star, S-T-A-R, hyphen, Telegram.com.
All right, one more time. L-I-Z.
L-I-Z at S-T-A-R hyphen Telegram, T-E-L-E-G-R-A-M .com.
All right, anyone who's interested in this field can contact you and maybe, because I know that there are blind people who would like to be journalist and just
sure.
Nobody's ever done it, and so I can't.
And your subject lines, if you could please put, you know, like blind journalist or something like that, just because we unfortunately get a lot of spam email. I want to make sure that I don't miss any emails from people that have questions.
Okay, so just
if y'all could make sure to put, you know, like blind journalist or something like that in the subject line, I'll know that it's important, because we get so many messages with subjects of hi and hello, and you know, and they're from various spammers.
Could be from spam is just a terrible. Congress going to have to do something about that?
They sure are.
Well, it sounds like you've led an interesting life and have an interesting job. Are you married?
No.
Well, I've been married enough for both of us, so. It sounds like you've led a good life and had an interesting job, and you still enjoy journalism. It's still something you like.
Oh, yeah, very
much. Well, carry on, and I don't know when we'll run this, but I'll call you and tell you before we do, and we even offer a CD of it if you'd like to share it with your friends.
Great,
Or whatever. We've been visiting with Liz Campbell, who's what they call you, a staff reporter?
A reporter is fine,
Just a reporter at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. So if you're on the NFP Newsline and you can go to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and see if you can find something that was written by Liz Campbell, who is totally blind and works as a reporter at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
And we also are on the web at www.star-telegram.com.
Star-telegram.com.
Yes.
On the web. Liz, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Phil.
And thank you all for listening. That's great. That lady has done quite well for herself as a sighted or blind person. It makes no difference. She's still at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, which you can find on the NFP newspapers if you choose to do so. We'll do it again next week. I don't know who will be our guest, but someone will, and it could be you. We would take your correspondence at blindlikeme, that's all one word, blindlikeme at TXU, TomXrayUnit.net or com. That's TXUcom. I'm drifting a little. TXUcom, TXUcom.net. Blindlikeme at TXUcom.net, and indicate that you'd like to be a guest and give us a phone number. We'll call you. Always looking for guests. You don't have to be a superstar, Ronnie Millsap or Stevie Wonder, any of that. Just be a blind person who's dealing with blindness. We'd love to have you. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned if you're listening to ACB Radio for the Blind Handyman. I'm Phil Parr. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.